the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, this is normally that time of the year you're thinking about the holidays. Thanksgiving has just passed, Christmas is ahead of us, and New Year's. But it's also that time of the year you might want to think about tax planning. And folks, a major tax change is ahead of us. Joining us on the program is CPA and tax specialist Kim Fischera. Kim, let's get through some of the particulars of taxes for 2016, since, you know, we've got a little bit over a month. I know for only a month left, there's probably not too many things that you can do to lower taxes. But what I'm looking at is a new president, a Republican-controlled Congress, where one of the top priorities is going to be tax reform, and that would involve playing around with deductions and lowering tax rates to 33%. So let's talk about some of the obvious things that this might imply. One, let's assume there is no tax change. And then number two, what would be done differently if there is tax reform as proposed by either Trump or Congress? So what should be done around this time of the year?
Well, Jim, it's nice to be with you again. I always enjoy talking with you. Of course, I always dread this time of year as we move into tax season. Things are going to get pretty busy for us. But there's still a lot people can still do between now and the end of the year. We have a full month, and we get fairly busy in December with clients that need to do tax planning. Typically, people that have businesses or have a lot of variations in their income come to see us. And, you know, what people typically do is try to basically accelerate deductions and defer income, you know, find ways to increase their ability to write things off this year, especially with, you know, the tax brackets right now go up to 39.6% for federal. So there's an incentive to try to defer income. And the first thing that somebody needs to do is to do a tax projection and determine where they're at right now for 2016. And then once that's done, then you can start looking at, you know, what are the opportunities, the variables, the various options that they might have between now and the end of the year to hopefully reduce taxes.
Kim, is this one of those, let's take this scenario where, let's say, President-elect Trump and a GOP Congress do pass a tax bill and they lower the tax rates. Both the Trump plan would have three tax brackets, 12, 25, and 33%. Same with the Republican plan, 12, 25, and 33. It would seem if that's a probability, which it's looking more likely, you would want to defer income over into next year, where it would be taxed at a lower rate, either 25 or 33, and accelerate as much as possible all your deductions into this year. So what are some things that could be done to accommodate that?
That's in conformity with general tax planning anyway, because even if the tax rates were not going down, people typically try to defer income. It gives you the benefit of paying the taxes in the future. But a lot of this depends on the type of client that we're dealing with. You know, if somebody is just a straight W-2'd employee, they don't typically have as many options. They typically have to work through their employer, which would mean, you know, maxing out. You make sure you max out your 401k plan. I mean, a lot of people neglect that. They put it off. They don't think about the benefits, especially when the employer is, you know, matching it. So that's important to do. There's also opportunities for employees to possibly, you know, if they have the opportunity to have deferred compensation, which is basically going to be paid out. If they have a bonus coming up, if there's a way they could push that off into 2017, that would be helpful. If somebody has a small business, there's more opportunities because we work with a lot of small businesses, and the planning there involves what do I need to buy before the end of the year that I really need. If they're cash basis small businesses, which a lot of ours are because they're small, you know, they can prepay some things legitimately and take the deduction in, you know, 2016. Anything that they put on a credit card, even though it's not paid for, it can be deductible. There's a lot that we do with pension planning, which involves SEP, Simple Employee Pension Plans, 401k plans, IRAs, which means people can contribute money into a retirement plan and take a deduction on their 2016 return. And they can even pay some of that after the year. So there's a variety of ways that you can approach this. But most of it involves getting a snapshot of where you're at right now and then looking at what types of needs you might have between now and the end of the year, and trying to find ways to accelerate the expenses and defer into the future.
You know, Kim, a couple of things that just kind of strike me. I mean, if you take the average person, let's say you're a W-2 employee for a corporation and you have a 401k program, if you're over age 50, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there what they call an added amount that they can put in their 401k? I think it's $5,000, kind of like a catch-up provision.
It's actually $6,000, but the maximum base rate for a 401k plan is $18,000. And if you're 50 or over, you can add another $6,000 to that. They call it a catch-up provision. So you can get up to $24,000. And so, you know, when somebody is an employee, that's probably the first line of defense, is to make sure you're maxing your 401k. But I meet with a lot of clients that come in after the end of the year, and I look and they put like $5,000 into their 401k plans. You know, they're making a few hundred thousand dollars, and they're asking me how to save taxes. And I'm just saying, well, it's kind of late. You know, you didn't fund the plan. And then the other thing you can sometimes do is take advantage of some of the health planning benefits that are available, like the cafeteria plans, where you're allowed to use pre-tax dollars to pay for certain types of dependent care benefits, health benefits, and take that off the top as well.
So this extra catch-up provision of your, let's say, over age 50 is $6,000. This might be a good way to cut your taxes. Let's say December is bonus time. Companies award bonuses to employees for the year based on, you know, their accomplishments. You might want to direct your employer to take that bonus, whatever it is, and if you haven't contributed to the catch-up provision, put it into your 401k. And Kim, I want to talk about why that's important, whether it's a health savings account, whether it's a 401k, an IRA contribution. I want to talk about deductions in what you guys refer to as above the line, which is on page one, versus deductions below the line, which is on the back page of itemized deductions, and how key that is, because for some individuals, depending on their income, they could lose some of their itemized deductions.
All right, the itemized deductions are affected by somebody's adjusted gross income. The adjusted gross income is the above-the-line total income. You know, after certain, there are some adjustments that go against it, but it's basically your gross income minus a few things that are allowed above the line. And the itemized deductions are affected by the adjusted gross income. The higher the adjusted gross income, the less of some of these itemized deductions that you can take. I won't get into all the details, but, you know, medical is severely restricted. Medical can't be deducted unless it exceeds 10% of adjusted gross income, and 7.5% if you're over, I think, 65, it's a little better. Miscellaneous itemized deductions are not deductible unless they exceed 2% of adjusted gross income. You know, once your adjusted gross income gets too high, and I don't remember the cutoffs, but you start phasing out a percentage of total itemized deductions. So therefore, we always try to keep adjusted gross income low if we can. And the benefit of an above-the-line deduction is typically better than itemized deductions. And then some of the itemized deductions are not completely beneficial because of alternative minimum tax, which takes away some of those benefits, usually on a federal return. We don't have much problem with the state, but it's usually the federal.
And Kim, when you talk about, you know, reducing your taxes with itemized deductions, whether you're doing it with, let's say, a pension plan or itemized deductions, I want to talk about something that catches a lot of people by surprise, and we're seeing it more and more. Could you explain to our listeners the alternative minimum tax and some of the sort of like gotcha type of things that can happen to an individual? You're thinking, okay, I'm going to accelerate my property tax, state tax deductions, or charitable contributions, and your deductions are so large, you actually get penalized and lose some of them.
Well, what happens, the alternative minimum tax has been around for quite a while, and I think originally the intention of the alternative minimum tax was to make sure that some of the really high income earners paid a certain amount of tax, that they couldn't wipe all their income out by using certain types of tax shelters. Basically what it is, it's another tax calculation that's kind of done in the background of the return, and there are some items that are not deductible. I mean, it's a complicated calculation, but the main items that are not deductible that affect most people are real estate tax, state income taxes. Those are the two big ones that push people into the alternative minimum tax most of the time, especially in California. When you have a high income earner with high California withholding or California taxes, and, you know, expensive real estate with high real estate taxes. So what that means is if somebody prepays their California tax or doubles up on their real estate tax for the end of the year, they're not necessarily going to get the benefit on the federal return, because what happens is when we calculate alternative minimum tax and we disallow the deductions for these state and real estate taxes, then the alternative tax is now higher than the regular tax. And the way the formula works is you take the higher of the alternative minimum tax or the regular tax, whichever one is bigger, is what gets on the return. So that incremental difference between the two is this, it's like a penalty that gets added to the federal, usually it's federal return that we see this, that increases the tax and basically doesn't allow any benefits for these state income taxes.
So we talked about an employee, somebody that works for a company, gets a W-2. We talked about making sure you take advantage of all your 401k deductions, maybe accelerate. This might be a year, and this is sort of tricky, where you might want to accelerate your deductions into 2016, given the fact there's a strong possibility that tax rates will be going down in 2017. Now, Kim, let's talk about somebody that is self-employed. Either a partnership or a sub-S corporation, what do they do?
Well, in those cases, they are looking at their business needs. They basically need to analyze whether it's an S corporation or a partnership or a sole proprietorship. You know, they want to make sure their accounting is up to date. They want to look at their business needs and determine, you know, do they need a new utility vehicle for the business? Because they can expense this stuff. They can use this Section 179 election that allows them to expense, and it's been up to almost $500,000 you can write off based on large purchases of equipment and computers and fixtures for the office. So that's probably the first thing that business owners are looking at. In addition to that, they also have the benefit of setting up and maximizing the retirement plan. And sometimes it's a matter of making sure they pay themselves enough salary to maximize their retirement plan, or they might have a spouse that's working for them that's been underpaid because they might want to increase the spouse's compensation and apply some more benefits toward a retirement plan for them as well and bring down their income. They can also look at health savings accounts. I mean, that's not just restricted to a business owner, but if they have a high deductible medical insurance plan, they might be eligible for an HSA account, and they put a certain amount of money into that.
Can I stop you there on the health savings account? Can you describe what the deduction is and where it's applicable? In other words, who can use it and how much can you salt away?
Well, basically, you have to have a high deductible insurance plan. You know, many people do that, and I'm not sure what the details are, and I think the deductible has to be at least a couple grand. And depending on whether you have a single or a family health savings account, you can put, and this is just off the top of my head, I think it's like $2,000 or $3,000 for a single plan and maybe up to $6,000 or $7,000 for a family plan. And that can be funded up through April 15th of the following year. And it's deductible above the line, you know, on their individual income tax return.
Okay, so that's above the line. Once again, very important for lowering your adjusted gross income, which also plays into your itemized deductions. So going back to the business owner, you talk about you can go out and, let's say, buy equipment, buy computers, new machines, and things like that. And Kim, once again, what's the limit in terms of how much you can deduct?
Well, I believe it's been pushed up to about $500,000 now. But again, you know, in the past, Congress has had to do an extender bill to push that out every year because the normal limitation was $25,000. It's actually a couple $100,000 is what it is right now. So you can deduct up to $200,000 in Section 179 deductions.
And so one of the obvious things to do is you can basically buy some equipment. You get a deduction for that. Secondly, let's talk about pension plans, because obviously the pension plans for individual owners of business are much more favorable than, let's say, the typical plans available for most employees that work for a public company or a private company, which are 401k plans. So let's talk about some of the easy ones like SEP IRAs, because, you know, they favor the self-employed individual, and I believe, Kim, the amount is somewhere over $50,000, if I'm correct.
For 2016, the maximum of $53,000 that you funded. And, you know, we have a lot of clients that set up these SEPs. One of the main reasons they do is because this is the only plan you can create, you know, after the end of the year. You can set this thing up after the end of the calendar year or fiscal year that your company is dealing with. And you can fund it up to the due date of the income tax return, including extensions. And it's basically, if you're being paid a salary from an S corporation, it's 25% of the salary maximum. If you're a sole proprietor, it nets out to about 20% of your net income from the sole proprietorship. Now, one of the caveats is that if you have one of these plans and you have employees that have worked for you, you know, full-time employees, and I think with a SEP, it's a three-year eligibility requirement, you also have to include employees that have worked for you for at least 3 years. So, you know, if somebody has a lot of employees that have been around for a long time, the SEP may not make a lot of sense. But if somebody only has one or two people, or they're just a sole shop, you know, they're just working on their own, then a SEP is a very easy, convenient way to max out the income. Now, if somebody's in a situation where they do have employees and it's going to be cost prohibitive to be funding a retirement plan for everybody, you know, then they can look at a 401k plan and basically take advantage of the ability to put, you know, up to $18,000 or $24,000 of money taken right out of their W-2 or out of their own income away. And then the company make a contribution on top of that is kind of a voluntary option that they might have, and they can do that after the end of the year.
Kim, if you're a sole proprietor, let's say, and you want to set up a SEP and the limits are $53,000, what about the idea? Let's say you're doing very well. What about, let's say, your wife works in the business, paying her enough and putting in $53,000 for her as well? So a husband and wife could put $106,000 tax deferred with a write-off. Is that possible?
Yeah, it is possible. You just have to store the compensation accordingly so you can max it, get the full $53,000. But yeah, you have to put the wife on salary. And also, you have to understand that you can't just pay the wife without her doing any work. You can get into trouble if you're doing that. He or she basically has to be employed in the business and providing some services. You know, but we have situations where the wife and the husband are both working in the business, and, you know, maybe just the husband's getting paid or just the wife's getting paid because they don't want to pay Social Security taxes on the income for both people. And so you have to look at that scenario and decide, hey, is it worth paying, you know, equal salaries so we can maximize our retirement benefits aside from maybe some additional Social Security taxes to get paid on it? Because, you know, there's a twofold benefit to funding these retirement plans. You know, one is it's deferring the income tax into the future. You get more compounding on the money over all the time it's in a tax-deferred account. And number two, you're saving for retirement, you know, and people need to be encouraged to do that. We kind of live in a society that doesn't save anymore, especially the young people. So they end up, you know, all of a sudden now they're 50 years old, they haven't gotten any money saved. So I'm always encouraging people, especially when they're young, to start putting money aside. So that's the other side of that benefit.
So we've got some obvious things that we can do here, both on the employee side and the self-employed. I want to talk about something that also happens around this time of the year. We think about charitable giving, and let's talk about what are the limitations on charitable giving in terms of, let's say, itemized deductions. Sometimes you have individuals that are in a very fortunate situation. Maybe they sold their company, they have public stock, and they have capital gains, you know, things like charitable remainder trust. What are some of the things that could be done from a charitable giving point of view?
There's a limitation on charities, but it's pretty generous. Somebody can donate, we're talking about money, cash in this case, you can donate up to 50% of your adjusted gross income. And one thing I might add, if somebody's over 70.5 and they're subject to required minimum distributions and they're taking money out of their retirement plan, they can actually make an election and have that money go directly to the charity. So instead of taking a charitable deduction, in other words, instead of picking up the retirement income above the line and having a high adjusted gross income and then deducting the charity on Schedule A, they can elect to have they come directly out of the retirement plan and go to the charity and then report less above the line and not show the deduction. So that's another option that's out there for older people. But basically, you know, people, they can donate money, they can donate stock in publicly traded companies and get a deduction for the fair market value of stock. They can donate property, you know, clothing and household items. If those valuations get too large, once they get over $5,000, you have to have appraisals, of course, and there's some formalities, especially if you're donating vehicles and that sort of thing. So there's some paperwork that has to be done. But making charitable donations, first of all, they're not limited by alternative minimum tax like the state and the real estate taxes are. So, you know, if somebody is in a position to help other people and they have certain charitable organizations they're interested in, the first thing to start thinking about is, you know, how much you want to deduct before the end of the year. You know, if somebody is very well-to-do and wants to set up a charitable remainder trust, that's another scenario. I mean, they can make a huge contribution to the charitable remainder trust. They'll get a partial deduction for that, depending on how old they are. And then the charitable remainder trust will, depending on how it's set up, they're somewhat complex, but the charitable remainder trust can have some stream of income back to the client, and then the principal that goes into the trust is distributed to charitable organizations later on.
Kim, what are some of the things that individuals should think right now? If you were to come up with a checklist, let's say I'm a new client of yours. I'm walking in. We've got, about 30 days left, a little over 30 days left to the end of the year. What are some checklist items, if you were to come up with a to-do list, that somebody should do as an employee and somebody should do as a business? In other words, 1, 2, 3, what are some bullet points that people ought to consider?
Well, as an employee, as we discussed earlier, you have to look at your 401k plan, you have to look at your cafeteria plan, possibly consider the ability to do an HSA. If you don't have any type of retirement plan, then you might consider just doing an IRA deduction. So there are a few things to do there. If you have security investments, you might want to talk to your broker or an advisor and decide if you have capital gains, now's the time to take some losses against them if you can. So those are usually the things that somebody wants to look at. If your employer allows you to defer the bonus into the subsequent year, that's a possibility. If you're in a business, maybe a little more opportunity. You'd be analyzing your financial statements, determining your projected taxable business income before the end of the year, looking at what you can purchase before the end of the year, cash basis, maybe prepay a few things, buy equipment, review your retirement plan. If you have a 401k plan, then you need to make sure you fund the employee portion before the end of the year. That's important to do. If there's any way you can defer, invoicing a customer and, just holding off getting paid or something so you don't get the money received in the current year, that's a possibility, especially late in the year. So again, it's basically accelerating expenses and deferring income to the best that you can.
Would you also suggest that somebody listening to this show, we're telling them about, their 401k plan, a pension plan, accelerating certain deductions. Would you advise, Kim, that they see their financial advisor or their tax planner? Because a lot of times, and I'm sure you see this all the time, people will load up a bunch of deductions and then all of a sudden they get walloped with the AMT tax. So shouldn't they run that scenario between how much you want to deduct or how much you want to roll into this year without triggering an AMT tax and end up wasting your deductions?
Right. Well, that can be done pretty simply by running a tax projection. And again, the two biggest variables are the California taxes and the real estate taxes. There are other issues with AMT that I won't get into all of them. But those are the two big things that come up most of the time for most clients. And that's just a matter of sitting down with your tax preparer, running a projection. If you have a lot of investments in an investment portfolio, then you should really talk to both people and make sure that your investment advisor is talking to your CPA. Because, sometimes it's just the opposite. We recently had a situation where we had an elderly client with this huge net operating loss from the disposition of a LLC. And we ended up doing $1 million Roth conversion. We decided let's take an extra $1 million out of her, from an RMD account from her pension and convert it to a Roth because we had this huge loss to use up. And so sometimes you're doing that. You're accelerating income. So it's important to just understand where you're at, talk to your investment advisor and your CPA, depending on your situation, especially if you have a lot of variables. If your income has shifted dramatically during the year, if you have more dependents, if your filing status has changed, if you have large medical or charitable, sometimes you can bunch those up in one year. So you might have a lot of medical expenses, for example, and you can pay some of them next year or pay some of them this year. You may want to consider bunching those up and paying them all this year if your adjusted gross income will allow you to deduct them. And again, that just takes a sit-down meeting with a tax preparer that has some planning software and is willing to spend the time doing that.
So, Kim, if we were to sum up, wouldn't the safest place to be in terms of tax planning are doing those things that give you above-the-line deductions and reduce your adjusted gross income? Because it seems like, wouldn't that have a better limitation in terms of not getting you into an AMT situation where AMT tends to be triggered off a lot of itemized deductions?
Yeah, to the extent you can reduce your adjusted gross income, that's much more beneficial than playing around with itemized deductions. But again, not all itemized deductions are created equal. There are some that are more beneficial than others. Charitable contributions are one of them. You know, mortgage interest on your home. Now, they have limitations on that. But again, you can deduct the mortgage interest on a primary residence on up to like $1.1 million of debt. So those deductions are not subject to alternative minimum tax. The ones that are, again, are real estate taxes, state income taxes. Another one we didn't talk about would be unreimbursed employee business expenses. So if somebody works for a company and the company is too cheap to reimburse them for anything, and they're spending all kinds of money on meals and entertainment and travel and supplies, they may find out that they're not going to get very much benefit from those deductions either, because number one, they have to exceed 2% of adjusted gross income. But number two, the employee business expenses are also not deductible for alternative minimum tax. So that's another one that does come up occasionally too. So again, you're right. The benefit of getting an off-the-line deduction is typically going to be better than itemized deductions.
Well, you know, it's really amazing because I know you see and study the tax laws. That's what you do for a living. But, you know, we have seen in each administration, we saw it with the Bush administration where tax laws were changed. They were lowered, became more favorable. Then we get a new administration with Obama. The tax laws go in the opposite direction. Taxes go up. Now we have a new administration coming in, and it looks like taxes could be going down again. So a good time to start thinking about tax planning. Well, listen, Kim, as we close, if our listeners would like to contact you, especially those that live in California, how could they do so, please?
Well, you can call us. Our phone number here is 760-431-1220, and I'd be happy to talk to them.
Kim, as always, I appreciate you coming on the program. All the best to you, sir. Happy holidays and a happy new year.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
Well, that concludes my interview with Kim Fischera. Once again, folks, if you're listening to this, you've got about 30 days left to get some tax planning. And this is going to be a real key year, realizing that every single president that has come in has changed the tax laws. I don't care if it was Clinton, whether it was George Bush, or it was President Barack Obama, and now President-elect Trump. So we are going to see some major tax law changes coming next year. It might be a good idea to talk to your advisor, maybe tax harvesting on capital gains, but talk to your advisor, talk to your CPA, and do it now. Don't wait to the last week, or you end up going in at the beginning of the year and you turn in your papers to your tax accountant and there's not much you can do at that point. Now's the time to seriously think about tax planning. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.